Menards is the ultimate home improvement destination in the Midwest. Since 1958, we've been supplying you with everything from hardware to automotive needs. We believe in helping you save big money on every project, big or small. From top-of-the-line tools to plumbing supplies, paint, and appliances, we've got you covered. We thank you for making Menards a part of your year. From our family to yours, have a safe and happy new year.
Save big money at Menards.
Keith Felcher, welcome to the Village Oak Tree for September 4th. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell, and I thank you for joining me once again. Today, my guest is David Beckmeyer, who produces a podcast called Outrage Overload. And this is what we're going to be talking about. It's the state of American toxic politics is what he's primary subjects are. We're going to kind of wing this a little bit because I didn't have a lot prepared up front. But with that, I'll bring him up and let's see what we got going on. Mr. Beckmeyer, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Nice to be here with you, Terrence.
Yes, sir. So kind of give us and I ask this of everybody. It kind of introduce yourself. Tell us about your podcast. And in my case, I'm curious a little more. I'm more curious. Other than what you wrote, why you started this and what your intent is.
Okay, great. Yeah, well, I'm David Beckmeyer, and I was a tech guy for a long time, so I was in Silicon Valley in the tech industry and kind of did that for quite a few years. I retired from that a few years ago, and, we were kind of in a lot of this, this ramping up of things. You kind of had the 2016 election that seemed to ramp a lot of things up. And, you saw people getting mad at each other online and getting invites in like real life and disconnecting with friends and family and Uncle Joe can't come to Thanksgiving anymore and all this kind of stuff. And you see that kind of thing. And then you see, you had the COVID stuff and lockdowns. And then that kind of everybody was afraid again. And we had lockdowns and people fought over that. And so it ramped up even more. And I kind of just saw all this going on around me and in my life. And like, what's going on here? We're losing friends over politics, lifetime friendships, family members we've had forever. And everybody's got a story like this. I mean, pretty much.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, everybody's got a story like this, And so it's like, what's going on here? I mean, this isn't, like what's happening? Like, what's going on with us? And so that was my big driver. And there were a number of sort of straws that broke the camel's back kind of things towards the end. But that got me sort of just looking into it. And then from there, okay, so what's going on? I'm kind of a science geek, science nerd. So maybe we can see there's some research going on in this space and some work happening. And so, there was, it turned out. So I thought, okay, well, that's an interesting topic. How can I present that? Well, it was a vlog or a blog or whatever. And I settled on a podcast because it could be long form. You can deep dive a little bit. And maybe I thought, well, people tend to like to be told stuff rather than read stuff. Yeah. So instead of writing 10,000 words, I'll have somebody on and I'll kind of be the layman and I'll try to have them. So my show isn't like two academics, two professors talking professor to professor, right? Or I try not to have it be that. I try to have it be, a couple of folks talking over a coffee shop and how can we present some of the scientific material in layman terms? And then I'll be the, my role is kind of to be the, I'm not afraid to ask the dumb questions. So, I'll ask the questions people would like to ask. And then it turns out scientists aren't the only things I bring on and researchers. I also talk to practitioners because there are a lot of practitioners out there kind of looking at this space and trying to actually do stuff beyond just the research and what's happening. So that's another area where I talk. So I talk to psychologists but also I talk to like community leaders religious leaders and, this kind of thing, all these people that are out there doing stuff. In this space, trying to see what we can actually do to lower some of this toxicity. So that's how this all got started. It was in my life, and it's in my, and you just saw it all over the place. And I thought there's got to be something that we can start looking at this.
Sure. I mean, I've read a lot of articles on this stuff. I know some people who do blog articles on this same subject, and yeah, my history goes back to kind of like 2016. Donald Trump was doing his thing. And of course, as old as I am, you know, we're both similar in age, it seems like. I went through all the years in the 60s and 70s when Donald Trump was ripping everybody off. And everybody, you know, anybody who ever paid attention to any kind of news knew this guy was a crook going, you know, right from the get-go. So I said, all right, there's no way I'm voting for this guy. So I have a son-in-law, and back in 2016, he was 2015 even, he was all over this. Oh, he was a diehard Trump, this, that, and every other thing. And I'm like, and I started a conversation with him, and it didn't go well. So I didn't touch it again. I never brought the subject up with him. I also have a younger brother. Now, obviously, he's a lot older than my son-in-law, of the same mind. He is a big Trump fan, and, you know, he's not as aggressive as my son-in-law in that regard, but he still is one, you know, very much in there. And so him and I stopped talking a few, you know, years ago. And I'm like, okay, I mean, and that's basically what it's come down to. And I think a lot of families are the same way. You have these people in your family, and you either get in a fight with them and it blows up and goes crazy, or you just stop talking to them. And that's kind of where I went, is I just stopped talking to these people, you know, even though we're, you know, like my brother, we're blood relatives. My son-in-law is married to my, you know, my lovely daughter. She's of the opposite perspective. And I've often asked this question, how do they survive in that house? Because she's as liberal as you can get. And he's, you know, like I said, he's deep dive into Trump MAGA. So I'm like, yeah, I don't get it. I don't ask questions, but I've always wondered. And of course, my daughter being the apple of my eye, so to speak, I'm very concerned about her, you know, well-being. So again, you know, every once in a while, the question pops back up in my head, is she doing okay down there? I have to wonder. You know, she's not talking too much, so I don't know. And I don't know how other folks are managing. I mean, like I said, I read stuff here and there, and a lot of other people are going through the same thing across the country. My question is, in the future, in a very, very near future, I mean, can we expect this to blow up here after November?
Yeah, well, it's definitely a hard question. I think, you know, like I say, this toxic boiling point is up there, right? And that's part of what we try to talk about, is kind of lowering this temperature. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and finding ways to understand each other a little better, finding ways to, you know, when you can talk to each other, but, you know, sort of finding ways rather than fight each other, to sort of live with each other and right. You know, and figure out how to disagree better. And, you know, if you look at what, no expert has a definitive, you know, on when this breaking point might be. Right. And some people talk, so, you know, but yeah, I would say that you, with the toxic level that we're at, I think no matter what the outcome is, some people are going to be mad, right? Half the country are going to be mad, basically, because we're pretty evenly divided.
Yeah.
We're fairly evenly divided, and we're fairly bitterly divided. Like, the two sides can't understand each other. Like, why does this person, I mean, both sides use the same exact words to mean totally different things. Like, you'll see both sides saying, I can't believe it's this close. And each will have their own argument for why they believe it's this close, because they can't believe there's somebody that would vote for the other side. We have a heart. So we've sort of told ourselves these narratives. We really believe them. And it's gotten worse over the last, you know, sort of, it's been 50 years of this, or maybe more, 50 or 60 years of this building. And it's sort of escalated, certainly over the last, you know, 10 or so. But, and it's escalated. It's taken a few steps over a different time, but it's been escalating that whole period. Sure. And we've been telling ourselves these narratives that, not only is the other side got bad ideas and they're kind of stupid or whatever, but they have evil intent. They have bad intent. So, and we really believe these stories now. And we've been, you know, the media has been telling them this, campaigns tell us this, you know, these campaigns sometimes all their whole pitch is this person's terrible. Like, they don't even tell you what they're going to do. They just say that person's terrible. And for a lot of people, that's enough. If you tell me that person's terrible enough, then to some degree, there's this lesser of two evils. I'm going to vote for this other person because I can't vote for that evil. It's way more evil. So, you know, and these people, you know, and most of us are pretty set in that, right? Like, it's very hard. We're not very movable on that.
Yeah.
And so we have to, go ahead.
There's very few of us anymore who actually look at what these people want to do. You know what I mean? I mean, in my case, I might consider the Republican Party right now if the people that they had putting up for the office of the president had a little more common sense and were a little more reasonable. But Donald Trump, I mean, he's been a crook for 50 years. Nothing's going to change that. And, you know, I look at what he did in the 4 years he was in before, and, you know, all he did was run around flailing his arms, not keeping anything he promised, and stealing from everything he possibly could, in any way he could. And some of it's outright against the law, but he's gotten away with it. So I'm thinking, well, why would he not do that again? So why would I vote for that? I'm not voting against the Republican Party. I'm voting against Donald Trump, the man. I mean,
yeah. Well, it's interesting. That's kind of an interesting unintended sort of side effect of Trump, you could say, almost, is that a lot of centrists and even some left-leaning people now are much more open to a more reasonable, I guess, for the lack of a better term, you know, more moderate in at least their behavior, you know, whether they're moderate mm-hmm. issues or not, but moderate on their behavior, Republican, right? Like all of a sudden, Mitt Romney looks pretty good when, you know, during the Obama campaign, he was terrible, right? You know, and certainly they'd take a John McCain in an instant, right?
Right.
So, yeah, it is interesting side effect there. Yeah, the incentives that keep us fighting like this, I think, are a big challenge. But yeah, you know, Trump is kind of a wrench in the works in some sense, because he just really, you know, he tapped into a grievance that was there, right? He didn't really create this division and this grievance. He really tapped into it. And I think that there's a reckoning there that has to come. And, I think, you know, neither side is really, you know, I think the left needs to be, you know, more appreciate that more. Like, it's not going to do you any good just to call everybody that wants to vote for Donald Trump stupid, or you just, you know, figure their lost cause. Somewhere in there are, you know, are good reasons, and understanding those reasons is going to be important, and mm-hmm. doing, you know, figuring how you're going to help those people, or, you know, give them an idea you're going to help them. But to your point about, like, people don't really look at what anybody's going to do, that's been intentional to a degree, right? I mean, the politicians and the campaigns and the parties have spent effort on that, right? I mean, it's like, it's hard to do policy, and it's hard to, you know, and they aren't as different as they want to appear to each other, right?
No.
When you look at these policies, they're, if you look at even the two RNC and the DNC put out their campaign, or what do they call it? Their platforms. And, you know, if you tear them down and take away some of the buzzwords and the mean words and stuff, they're a lot more similar than they are different.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And that's one of the things that a lot of people don't realize, because they're not looking underneath the hood, so to speak. Okay. All they see what's being flashed on their screens. And they, you know, one of the things I was reading about here a while back is the media basically runs on what they call clickbait articles, right? So they set up headlines to get your attention. And then if you really, really want to get beyond that, which few people do these days, you can read the article. A lot of times what's the meat of the article really is not what it says in the headline. Okay. But it's clickbait, as they call it. And that's what drives the money for the media. And that's the other part of this whole thing, is this is what people don't realize, is that the capitalist society, the extreme capitalism, the United States and, you know, Western Europe, to a lesser degree, find themselves in, is driving all of this right down the throats. Okay. And nobody realizes what's going on. We're all being led like sheep to slaughter. And, you know, so because I read everything from both sides, I mean, I don't read the more extreme stuff for that matter, but I do read from the right, I read from the left, some things here and there, but the majority of what I read comes from outside the United States, because I can't trust American media anymore. I mean, you listen to CNN or NBC, ABC, CBS, and this is something I learned when I was in the Army years ago, that they're all being told what they can publish, okay? And even recently, in the last 10, 11 months, with this business going on in Gaza right now, is that the federal government is telling mainstream news, you can publish this, you can't publish that. We're going to tell you what you can and can't do. and editors are scrubbing journalists' articles because they don't fit the government narrative that they want to put out. And this has been in multiple independent news journalism, you know, for several months. And, you know, I'll give you an example. I didn't know this until I went to Afghanistan in 2002 with my Army unit. Now, we were a special operations unit, so we operated kind of outside the wire and all that. So at one point, we had journalists embedded with our unit. They were there to do some fluff stories on some, you know, humanitarian stuff that we were involved with. And I actually had a reporter from the New York Times tell me then, now this is 2002, tell me then that they were only allowed to publish per government mandate what certain articles, and they could not talk bad about certain things. You could only write about this, you could only write about that. And I said, well, why is that? I thought you guys had freedom of the press. He said, no, we don't have freedom of the press. Not at all. Okay. You want to, you know, if you want to work for, you know, coffee money, you can go to work for an independent media outfit. But if you want to make the big money, you go to work for New York Times, Washington Post, and, you know, the big guys, but you get told what you can write and what you can't. If you submit something and the editor's got a guideline of what they're able to publish, they're going to scrub your article and they won't touch it. I'm like, wow. Okay. So, you know, it kind of jerked my head around. Now you can understand that, you know, that's 22 years ago. And I've been watching all this stuff ever since. And 2003, I was back home, but I was watching the news. And I saw another instance of outright censorship of the government against American newspaper when the Washington Post got told that you are not allowed to publish any negative stories about the invasion of Iraq. And I'm like, okay, I saw that. And, you know, I read the article and I've never forgotten it, that the Washington Post was under threat of government sanction for publishing articles that weren't, that were critical of the invasion. And ever since then, I've been watching media from overseas and they're picking these things up. But you don't see any of that in the United States. So, you know, ever since I've been kind of like, okay, all right, here we go. There's no such thing as freedom of the press. And even my own case, YouTube has gotten in on this censorship here of late. I had a video that I posted about COVID. It was critical of the CDC and YouTube didn't like it. So they pulled it. I'm like, okay, that was interesting. And then about a week or so ago, some other podcasters that I watch, independents, they got blocked for a whole week. A media outfit called the Gray Zone. They published something about Israel that they didn't like. So YouTube said, yep, sorry, you're blocked for a week. And their sponsor, another podcaster, interviewer, also got blocked for the same stuff. So yeah, censorship is alive and well here in the United States. And so much for, you know, and then we go back to the other things in the First Amendment, freedom of speech. Okay. Last spring, we had all the peaceful pro-Palestinian college students on their college campuses being overrun by militarized police simply for daring to be pro-Palestine. Okay. I mean, they weren't doing anything else other than peaceful protest. And, you know, they got rolled up and it was across the country. Austin, Texas, UCLA, Columbia, New York, and several other universities. And now the students are saying, well, we're going to do it again here this fall. Well, guess what? You're going to get more of the same because the government is going to say, no, you're not allowed to criticize Israel, so on and so forth. The UK, you know, Germany especially rolled up all their protesters. So the West, what I call the West, you know, Western Europe and the United States, and even Canada to a lesser degree, are all about saying, now you can protest, but you can only protest what we tell you can protest. So much for First Amendment rights. It's not there anymore.
Well, I think I have a lot. I'd have a lot of guests on my show that would probably disagree with you to a degree, and think like it's all in moderation and somewhat, and we're trying to enforce all those things. But you know, one thing that I do, we talk about a lot on my show. I do bring in folks on media, so I do a lot of conversations about media, and you were sort of talking about the clickbait problem and all that, and. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't know that the author of the piece didn't write the headline, right? That's written by like the marketing department, right? So it can go in any direction that it wants. And so even sometimes the journalists themselves are mad at those headlines because it doesn't say what the article says. Yep. But, you know, and like you were saying, a lot of it is the incentive structure, right? I mean, you know, so this is true of social media. I mean, you could say that, you know, it was, you know, a bunch of guys in a room and getting together and they wanted to tear the country apart, but really they just want to make money. So they put this system together that builds for attention and engagement, and it just pulls you into this the worst content, right? So the worst, most vitriolic and hostile content is what kind of bubbles to the top, because that's what gets people mad, and emotions like anger and outrage are what keep people on these systems. So it's kind of a mess, and you know, it's not obvious what that solution is, right? It's not easy, right? You can, if you try to regulate them, now you are talking First Amendment problems, right? So how do you do that? You can try to fund alternatives or something, and people will even, how do you even do that? People will argue that that's you know, throwing a wrench in the works or putting a weight on the scale or whatever. So yeah, these are not easy problems to solve, partially because a word you use that we're sort of the C word that we can't talk about, which is capitalism. So
yeah,
if you want to make money, you know, and in that system of making money, that's how it goes. So it's going to be a big challenge. I mean, people know, like the psychologists, you know, the experts know how you could change social media to be positive, right? Mm-hmm. But they're not going to do it because it impacts their bottom line. So that's right. It's and so one thing we preach a lot on our show is to have a lens for it. Like, just be aware that all these people are incentivized to get you mad, right? Mm-hmm. So when you start feeling that anger from an article or a show you're watching or something, that's probably the time to like step back for a second and say, wait, they're doing this to me again. And what's this about? And what else is there to this story? Because a lot of times we talk about people telling flat out lies, but more often it's just they're leaving stuff out, right? Like there's probably more context to this story. And like you can maybe find that context somewhere else. And so then maybe that, and also I think another thing that I like, you raised a lot of issues that I probably don't have time to go into, and I'm not really an expert to even know what to go into. But I think a lot of these issues are, one thing to keep in mind is that most of these things are complex. I mean, the Gaza-Israel thing is more complex than the people that have these hard line, they draw a line in the sand somewhere, and this is that, I'm right, they're wrong.
Yeah, when you got senators like Lindsey Graham says, no, just nuke them. We don't care. Make them go away.
Issue is more complex than you think it is, right? So you're going to have to get some of those details. And the problem is humans aren't really good with that. Like, we like to have these nice black and white sides where we can pick a side and say we're on the winning side. And you know, so they kind of take advantage of that psychology. All these players do, politicians, news media, all of them, right? So that's trying to find yourself not in that lens. And like, if you do have somebody personally in your life that's on the other side, you know, find out if, you know, there's the organizations, like there's one called Braver Angels. There's others. I'm a moderator for a group called Crossing Party Lines, and they'll teach you some of these skills of how to have these conversations. And as long as you go into these conversations trying to learn instead of trying to persuade, you know, you can learn something. And I think understanding where they're coming from, if you ever do want to persuade, understanding where they're coming from is the first step, right? You're not going to persuade them if you don't even know why they think what they think.
Well, in my younger brother's case, I know why he thinks the way he does, okay? And it all goes back to that very famous quote. It's the economy, stupid, okay? And it's most of, not just my brother, but large majority of the people who are supporting this MAGA, you know, what I call it a cult now. I mean, used to be, I would say, a few years ago, you could call it a political party, a political action party. You want it, okay? But by and large, and it was the same reason why Donald Trump was so popular back in 2015 and 2016, it's the economy, okay? It's always been the economy in one fashion or another. The majority of the people who are buying into all this are disaffected. They lost their jobs. NAFTA killed a bunch of their stuff. You know, the Rust Belt is a huge, region of MAGA people simply because they want their old lifestyles back when they had good factory jobs and good salaries and all that kind of stuff before NAFTA and all that. You go down to the Deep South where it's always been ever since, early 19th century down there, it's always been the haves and have nots. Okay. And very little about that culture down there really changed over the 100 years or so. And so those folks obviously are not happy with the economy or their lot in life in as far as the economy. And it doesn't really matter about the color of their skin, because a lot of these very rural, very poor white people down there, they don't understand why they're poor, but they're mad about it and they want somebody to do something about it. So here comes Donald Trump saying, yep, I'm going to do something about it. Well, he didn't. Okay. But then he said he was going to do something in 2020, and then he didn't. So then Joe Biden comes along and he says a lot of things, doesn't do much. And people are starting to wake up to the fact that, hey, these guys are saying a lot, but they're not doing anything. Right? Now, you add on top of that, this obvious support for a genocide in Gaza, and then you make a whole lot more people mad. So now you've got a large, large percentage of the American population who are mad about the economy. They're mad about being complicit in a genocide. They're mad about throwing all that money over in Ukraine. And, you know, they're scared to death that Russia's going to escalate, which, to be honest with you, they have every right to do because U.S. and NATO were pushing them. So, I mean, the answer is most people want the government to change in one fashion or another. There's the people who want the economy to get better, make their lives better. There's the folks who are not necessarily hurting for money, but they're more on the liberal side where they don't want to be complicit in all these wars. They think you can do better with that money than sending it overseas. And rightly so. I mean, Joe Biden's infrastructure bill basically is stuck in a revolving circle right now. Some parts of it are getting enacted, but the large majority of it is still sitting, spinning its wheels, waiting for money to make it go. So it's all well and good to make promises, but when you don't follow through, after a while, people start catching on and now they're mad. So here we are in 2024 and these people are mad. And it's not just the MAGA people now. You got the people that were on the left who were saying, well, we're mad about this. So now everybody's mad about something. Question is, you have what they call a unipolar party system right now with, like you said, the Democrats and Republicans. Basically, if you get down to the very base part of their platforms, they're almost a mirror image of each other.
I mean, it's one reason that they often raise these cultural things, because it's one place where they might be different, right? But if you look at a lot of the economics and other things, they're a lot more similar than people think. And there's also a real perception problem of how America works and how our government system works too, right? I mean, Politicians promise stuff they always had, but it's up to us to realize they don't even have the power to do that. Like the president can't do all that stuff. Like they need Congress to make the laws. Right. Presidents don't make laws. Right. And so we expect a lot, and these guys that come in and say, I'm going to fix it. Well, they can't really. And I will say that, at least the Biden administration, when they had both houses for a little while, they did get the CHIPS Act and the Infrastructure Act. I think those will help those Rust Belt areas and all those that are affected. It's not going to fix everything, but at least there was something that happened. But yeah, it's not. Those, especially if they're federal government, they take a long time to happen. So some future president will sort of get the credit for that, right? But they are real things. They really did happen. But in terms of that, in terms of that left behind sentiment, I think that's a big one. And I've had a lot of experts on, again, I'm not a total expert on all this, but I kind of rely on a lot of the experts and I follow up and try to read about it. But one of the things that has happened is that we've put a lot of the opportunity and the wealth into a handful of cities around the country, right? So if you're in parts of Texas, you're in, parts of Ohio, you're in parts of Wisconsin, you're left out. Like you don't have those opportunities where you live. So you can have these people simultaneously kind of thinking things are great because, wow, the jobs are everywhere. I mean, I this is wonderful. I have, too many jobs. I can't even keep up. Like the companies can't hire fast enough, this kind of thing. But that's because you happen to be in one of those places that has right. that going on. And so that's a big problem. And, you know, I mean, a couple of things that there's some polling recently to back up some of what you were saying, too. Like there's a recent poll talking about how I think it was almost 70% of Americans want either major changes or they want to just tear the system down and start over when it comes to politics and economics. And I think bundling politics and economics is maybe not the right way to word that question, but it still tells you there's dissatisfaction out there, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, and so, you know, and I think that's that. So you can see this stuff showing up in polls, and you know, but it is kind of scary because these a populist like a Trump can come up and say, I can fix it all. And he sort of can't. I mean, even if he wanted to, he sort of can't, right? I mean, our system of government is designed that it's kind of hard to do things. And when you're as divided as we are, it's even harder, right? Because, you know, and when, to some extent, I put this back on us, when we are so tribal that we don't even want our side to ever compromise with the other side, that even makes it harder to get anything done.
Yes. And unfortunately, that's what things have come down to now.
Right. I mean, we get mad if our side makes a compromise of any kind.
It's become a very diverse, you know, divided tribal mentality now between the left and the right. You can call it whatever you want. Democrats, Republicans, you know, socialists, MAGA, whatever label you want to give it. But it all comes down to the same thing. We've divided ourselves into even tribal camps without realizing it. It's just kind of morphed that way over the last probably 8 to 10 years. And now the question is, you know, usually when you see things like that happen, and you know, it goes back to what you said, it does take time for these things to boil up. Well, this stuff has been boiling up for at least 10 years now. And it's getting ready to come to a head. So the FBI is actually sending out alerts right now saying that these certain groups are gathering up arms. They're watching them. And they're waiting for, you know, what's going to happen after November 5th. And a lot of these people are saying, well, you know what? We are going to take back our country. Well, what does that actually mean? You know, we're going to have another January 6th, or are we going to have something similar to that? You know, question is, what's that going to look like? What's the government going to do? And so I'm concerned a little bit. You know, it's like a lot of the newscast journalists that I've, you know, they've been reporting on this stuff. They've been saying, well, it's not going to be a nationwide something. Okay. It's going to be a faction in Texas. It's going to be another faction in maybe Idaho or various stuff, but they are gathering more people than they used to. So it will make the national news. Question is, nobody really knows how far these people are going to go and what's going to happen. So I'm like, yeah, okay, could get a little exciting in November, December this year, just, you know, for a brief, short amount of time. I mean, just got people, there are people that are, you know, like Chris Hedges, who are saying that the only way we're going to change the government is to have national strikes across the country and massive protest marches. Well, you know, like I've said, that's all well and good, but the American people aren't ready to do that yet.
They're not on the same page enough, right? We're too busy fighting each other.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of the social psychologists for years, you know, have told us that, you know, the way that this can start to turn around is, you know, some kind of a big unifying event, right? I mean, 9/11 was kind of an example. We kind of got together for a little while after that, but it didn't last very long. You know, and theoretically, COVID was the type of thing it was an opportunity to rally together, and we didn't.
Yeah.
We ended up fighting each other, right?
Yeah, Trump squandered that one.
They made it, and every, you know, I don't think it's only Trump. There was a lot of
him and his son-in-law and all the people working for him.
But I mean, and you mentioned the CDC and others. I mean, there's a lot of sort of blame to go around. But Trump played a big role.
I think if the CDC had better management, and if Trump hadn't pulled a lot of the money out of it, they probably would have done better. But again, it goes back to, you got Donald Trump, and he hired all these people as part of his government. And, you know, to me, that's, well, you know what? If that's what you pay for, that's what you get. Not that these people weren't smart, but a lot of them were more interested in not making Donald Trump mad at him, period. Right. And that had more to do with whatever happened back in 2020 than anything else.
Right. The people that were sort of successful almost had to do it either secretly or, uh-huh. The ones that got some stuff done had to almost find a way to talk Donald Trump into it, or that was if they weren't able to do that, or they had to do it in a way that he didn't know about it or whatever. So some of the good stuff was like that. So yeah, that was kind of a problem. But, in terms of this idea of what's going to turn this around, this idea of some kind of a big event, and so obviously there's one of those big events is sort of a civil war or some of these kind of guerrilla, which is not something we want, right? That's not a good thing.
Right. Yeah, nobody wants that.
But if you look at some of these things that have happened that could have been those catalysts and it didn't happen, like we only got more mad about it. So that's really discouraging to me. And I am worried about that like, what is this event that's not civil war that could cause us to come together again and realize where we could find as Americans, we can come together, or as civilians, or as citizens, or as something, come together with some identity other than red and blue and try, all that tribal
stuff.
Well,
I will tell you, I've been watching this uncommitted movement right now. They are gathering more and more by the thousands of people signing on to this whole business of setting up something to force the Democrats to make a change in policy towards the Middle East. Okay. Now, so far, it's gaining a lot of traction, but it's not making any headway, okay? So I'm watching that really carefully. I went to their website, and, it's pretty basic, but there's not a lot of material there. So I'm watching the news feeds mostly from outside the United States because, we have journalists from other countries that are coming and reporting on the same stuff that the American ones are. And so I watch their stuff, like Al Jazeera, for example. They're doing a lot of reporting here in the United States, but they're just one of a few. But the big thing I'm looking at, though, is that, the uncommitted movement right now has gathered upwards of almost 1 million people. They're hitting close to 1 million people now. So, in overall scope of things, that's not a lot, but if enough of them decided that, no matter what, we're not going to vote for the Democrats. Well, they're not going to vote for the Democrats or the Republicans. And one of the things that they're saying is what I said earlier. They have come to the realization that there is no Democrat, there is no Republican. It's a unipolar party underneath. They figured it out. And so now that's one of the reasons why this uncommitted movement is gaining strength. Now, question, and this is my biggest question, is it going to be big enough to make a serious dent in the election here on November 5th? Nobody really knows for sure right now. So I'm kind of watching that, just to see. I don't know. I'm on the fence, truthfully. I don't know if you've heard anything.
Well, I know that. If you look at just the elections of the recent elections, like going back 20, 25 years, there's some presidential elections in particular are so close, and it's all decided by a few states and a few voters in a few states. So it's hard. I think on the presidential side, it's probably a little harder to say how much impact they can have, because it all depends on if they're distributed to swing states or not.
Right.
Because those are the only places where they could make enough difference. 1 million votes anywhere else. Well, actually 1 million votes, of course, but spread around 50 states is not enough. But if it's concentrated a little bit in swing states, it could. But I think they could have an impact more on the Senate and House, right? So you might see more. I'm expecting, because the sentiment is very negative towards on the polling of the sort of the direction of the country kind of polling that all of the polls do. It's very negative, right? It's down by 39 points or something like that. And whenever that's true, which is often true, by the way, people are always people are mad about something all the time, but that's a pretty big number. And when it's like that, that's usually when you see things like a blue wave or a red wave, but you see the incumbent get booted out. Mm-hmm. So I think that there is a good chance for some serious, losses for the Democrats in the House and Senate. Because of that sentiment is always bad for the incumbent side.
Yeah.
So And maybe that's bad for the Republic. Maybe they'll see the Republicans as the incumbent in the House, and maybe that'll mean Democrats do better in the House. I mean, you know, you kind of wonder about that, right? Because Democrats.
Yeah, well, theoretically- I'm one of those like to sit back and see how things go. And be honest with you, I am wondering just exactly that. I'm wondering how much the dynamics will change, because I mean, the majority of these people are coming from Michigan, which is a swing state. A lot of them are also now starting to become coming from Ohio, which is not necessarily a swing state, but if enough people from Ohio get wrapped up in this uncommitted movement, it could affect, like you said, it could affect elections, you know, state elections and, you know, Senate and, you know, House of Representative elections going forward, you know, for the next couple of years. So yes, it could in fact not necessarily have a huge impact on who sits in the White House, but it could have a dramatic effect on especially the House of Representatives. You know, that could be a big deal. So I don't know.
Yeah. And, you know, and we have a big challenge there too, because, you know, we have all these so-called safe districts, and that's gone up a huge amount over the last 50 years. Right. So again, you're back to this point that it's always, you know, that there's so many districts that because of all these safe, when you're in a safe district, it's all about the primary. Right. And the primary is how you get these extreme people in Congress. Right. Because it's all about who wins the primary, which tends to be this very small minority of the population picking that candidate. Right. But then they're going to win because it's in a red or a blue district.
Well, I'll give you two examples here. Jamal and Cori Bush. Okay. Jamal Bowman in New York, where the APAC candidate wiped him out. And Cori Bush, same thing over in St. Louis, got wiped out by APAC. But that's the other part of this whole equation, is that a lot of, and it goes back to what you just said just a minute ago about minorities electing these officials to go to Washington. And it's a lot of people are seeing this and they're saying, well, wait a minute, we didn't vote for this guy. How did he get elected? Well, okay, what happened? And so there's a lot of that going on right now. And there's people, a lot of people get mad about it. So I'm kind of wondering, how's that going to change? Well, then you go back to the other side of the equation is, and I'm sure the Democrats are doing it to a degree as well, but in the news of late, the last several months, going back into last year, the Republicans have been guilty of and have been taken to court over gerrymandering their districts in various states, and especially in the Southeast. And so that's going to have an effect. There's a lot of people really mad about that. And so they're standing up. And you got to wonder, well, how much did the Democrats also do in their districts? We're just not hearing about it.
Yeah, they do it too. Yeah, that's how we have these safe districts in both red and blue, right? Because they both do it.
Right. You know, and one of the most famous ones I'm aware of, you know, years ago I lived in Texas, so Austin was one of those blue safe zones, so to speak. And yes, the Republicans in Texas have been hammering on that place. I mean, if they, a lot of them have, you know, almost come out and say, well, if we could nuke the place, we would. Oh, no, we work there. Sorry, we can't do that.
Right. It's one of those small cities around the country that has opportunity, right? One of the small number of cities. Yeah. Yeah, no, you know, and so that's what we talk about a lot on the show, is just kind of trying to be more moderate in our, how we approach a lot of this, not necessarily in your issues. Like, you can still be strong willed and strong minded on your issues you're concerned about. But I think, you know, you can go about them and you can be more selective about where you put your outrage. Right. I mean, they're trying to kind of keep us so mad all the time that you literally can't think straight, because that's how the psychology works of it, that you're mad and you're just not thinking things through. So if you can temper that, And then maybe you might focus. Maybe there's some things we should be more outraged about, right? So I'm not 100% against outrage, but I'm against the outrage overload. You know, this idea that we've just got things dialed up to 11 all the time and we're not getting anything done. So, you know, I think that's one thing that I really try to focus on is just try to be a more observant observer, right? Like pay more attention, more diligent about the stuff you're taking in. And if you have that urge after 1 second to reshare, you probably, maybe I should step back. Maybe I don't need to reshare that. Maybe I should think about that a little bit.
I mean, I'm like that. I'm not real big on social media. You know, And I think a lot of it is because I grew up in the age where there was no computers and cell phones. Nobody ever heard of social media. And so I'm able to step back, you know, and that's got somewhat to do with it. But the other part of it is, just like you said, it's one of those, I see things that make me angry, okay? And yet I think to myself, okay, all right, that's all well and good to be angry about it. But what do I want to say? You know, in my case, a lot of times I'll let things go, but then I'll see something that really, I think, whoever the author of the article is, this should be promoted. You know what I mean? They've said something really, I don't know, I guess I don't have a word for it, but something really strong and very
profound.
Profound. Yeah, there you go. That I'm thinking, all right, you know what? This is something that I do want to mention to the people that pay attention to me. So, I mean, I have a Substack page where I, you know, I share certain articles from people once in a while, not a lot, but every once in a while. And I do other podcasts, you know, different things where I'll share news articles that I pick up, you know, that are in line with my viewpoints. And I consider myself kind of in the middle. I'm an independent, but I kind of, you know, sometimes I lean a little left, sometimes I lean a little right. The only Republican I am, I'm an Irish Republican. Okay. I'm not an American Republican, but that's another story. But the idea is that I take what I want, because I've always looked at presidential and congressional candidates as job. You know, you're up for election, then I want to see your resume. Okay. I want to know, are you qualified to do the job? Are you, you know, what are your viewpoints that are in line with my, what I call middle of the road? And I look at you as like, okay, if I'm a boss and you're interviewing for a job I have open, which happens to be senator of my district, or you want to be the president of my country, then you're coming to me like all the other citizens of this country and saying, hey, I'm interviewing for this job. This is what I think I can do. All right. And these are my qualifications. All right, fine. So we hire you for 4 years, or in Congress, we hire you for 2 years, whatever the case may be. You know, we hire you for the Senate, you're there for 6 years. But the idea is that you're being hired to do a job. Okay. You work for us, not the other way around. But unfortunately, you know, in the last probably 40, 50 years, things have turned around. These elected officials, they go to Washington, and once they hit the door, they say, well, nope, we're here, we're doing all this, and, you know, everybody works for us. I'm sorry, we elected you. Okay. Whatever happened to government of the people, for the people, by the people? Well, that's got turned around. It's not the case anymore. It only works when they're going for election. That once they get elected, then that goes out the window.
Well, I mean, holding them accountable is where we don't do a very good job, right? I mean, exactly. I think, you know, and I think, and that's an exaggeration too, because there are cases where people do get kicked out. But a lot of that is the stuff that we talked about earlier, which is they create these safe districts, so it's really hard to kick them out. They have to worry about the primary, and then after that, they're good. Like, they know they're going to win. And this idea that they don't have to campaign on doing anything, right? Because we don't hold them accountable to that. We hold them accountable to how much did they make us mad about the other side? How much did they tell us how we're good, they're bad? And we like that feeling of saying we're good, they're bad. And if they do that, like, I see people talking about how they love, you know, Adam Schiff is just one example. Hmm. What does the guy do? Most, you know, and he probably does do stuff. But if you see him talking about things, mostly all he ever talks about is how bad the other side is. Yeah. And people love him. Like, wait, you love him, but what did he do? No one can really tell me what he did. I'm sure he does do stuff. But it's just, and that's just one example of 435, right?
You're right.
I'm only picking on one guy. But
think about this example too. How long did it take to figure out that Santos was a crook, but he got elected, and look how long it took him to get rid of him.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Well, you know, and that's, again, like, our justice system is, wheels move slow. That's definitely true.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But it goes back to this district elected him. They have the ability to jerk his chain and saying, okay, you belong in jail. We need to replace you. Okay. But they didn't. Okay. And they waited and hemmed and hawed, and the Republicans played their games. And then finally the stuff got so egregious that they finally said, all right, you're done. All right. Right. You know, and then Melendez, you know,
I even was surprised they did that at this point. At this point, there's like nothing anybody can do. Like, it's like they just stay in anyway. I mean, you had Menendez too, but it's like, yeah, at this point, I'm becoming so cynical. It seems like there's no crime you could commit that will get you kicked out.
Well, you know, there's a lot of truth to that now with the Supreme Court latest deal, saying presidents can pretty much do whatever they want as long as they label it under the duties of the president. So he can walk out with a 9mm, shoot somebody in the head on Fifth Avenue, as Donald Trump said. And as long as I did it and labeled it as the duties of the president, I can't go to court for it. Well, the Supreme Court just said, yeah, pretty much, you know, and I'm thinking, okay, that doesn't get more outrageous than that. I'm sorry. there has to be a limit. And I firmly believe that I don't care if you're the president of the United States, you still need to be held accountable for what you do. And no matter whether it's your personal life or in the duties of the president, if you commit a crime, period. Okay. Whether it's a war crime on foreign soil or something, you know, here where you're taking bribes or what have you, you should be held accountable for it. Unfortunately, six judges on the Supreme Court said, nope, no, go ahead, do what you want.
Well, and theoretically, you know, we have the impeachment, right? But, and again, I put this back on us because we let ourselves get into this tribal mode so much. But, like, impeachment can never happen in this divided. There's no crime, I don't think. Like, there's no crime someone – if Donald Trump wasn't convicted after January 6th, yeah. I don't see any situation where any president would ever get convicted now, because it's so tribal. You can't get a two-thirds majority for anything, you know, you get a military budget, you know, sometimes, but that's about it. Mm-hmm. And that gets back to this idea that they're more alike than they are similar, than they are different. But, you know, for anything that's divisive, like an impeachment, that's a political move. Mm-hmm. It just can't happen. So we can't enforce what was initially the idea that, well, nobody would let, you know, a crazy convicted 34 felony person be president. Right. you know,
<think. laughs>
but now they will. Right. That we've moved that Overton window so much that, you know, like I say, Donald Trump is just sort of an anomaly in that, or I shouldn't say anomaly. He's like he didn't really create all this, you know, it was all there for him to take advantage of. Now he just opened up that door.
That goes back to what I've always said about Donald Trump. He's always been an opportunist. Okay. He's been a grifter opportunist all his life. And, you know, he's astute that way. And because back in 2016, he figured that out really quick. Okay. Yeah.
He was ahead of every pollster, every pundit, all of them. Yeah. Like, they had no idea. This guy blew past them.
He's at his advantage every go around here, and he wants to continue doing so. So I'm like, okay. And like I said before, I don't have a problem with the Republicans per se if they were to kind of moderate some of their stuff a little bit. You know, guys like Lindsey Graham and Tom Cotton, I've got no use for, okay? Because they're gonna put the world into World War III. But you've got other moderates there who could temper those guys. But on the other hand, you know, you want to stand behind Donald Trump? I'm sorry. No, then I'm done with you. Okay. You're gonna put him up as your front man, then we all know what you're doing. It's a bait and switch. You're going to put him up there and let him flail around. Meanwhile, you're going to be working around the backside, doing what you want to do, kind of like what, you know, last time. So I've got the same issue with Kamala Harris. We all know that she's just a front person for the Democratic Party. There's a lot of people pulling strings, and they're pretty much telling her what to do, how to run her campaign. And if she gets elected, they're going to tell her how to be president. Okay. She's a lot more articulate than Joe Biden right now. And that's the biggest reason why she's up at the front. But as far as her making her own decisions, yeah, largely not so much, you know, and a lot of people can see through that. So that's one of the reasons why there's such a 50-50 divide in the country right now, because a lot of people are seeing through the smoke and mirrors. So now what? Everybody vote for Jill Stein? I don't know. Could get interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenging problem because the election reforms are hard. Again, anything divisive now is hard to get through Congress and hard to make those laws. The states have some control over things. I mean, we could do more ranked choice voting. That might help. But in the end, it still might go back to the same two at the end. But maybe that would create more openings for, you know, some more third party pressure. And that third party pressure, even if the third party ultimately fails, that third party pressure might at least get the other parties to change. Right. Yeah. So that's one reason why I think some of those electoral reforms are reasonable to look at. And I'm ready to try anything. Like, you want to do ranked choice voting? Let's try it. Like, let's find out if it works. We don't know.
It's worked
if
it's for a couple of states.
Right. You know, Maine seems to be working.
Yeah. Maine did it, started it here a couple election cycles ago, and it seems to work for them guys. It made a couple of people, you know, a couple of counties up in Maine mad. I say that only because I'm from there. You know, so I pay attention to what's going on. But yeah, it did. But it worked. Overall, it worked well for them. It gave them a good balance. So, yeah, there is some thought to that ranked choice voting. And a couple other states have made it work for them. I was reading something here a month or so ago. One state has it, and they don't like it. So I don't know. But again, everything depends on the electorate in the state.
They either
like it or they don't like it. So,
right. You can't do it nationally because it's not in the Constitution. No. That's not how we run elections.
No, it has to be done state. But I mean, you know, so who knows? Who knows what the future is going to look like? So, listen, I'm going to go ahead and cut this short here. So, if you got any last thoughts before I close out?
Well, you know, I had a guest, Peter Coleman, who runs a group called Starts With Us, and he was saying, what business are we in? Well, we're just trying to prevent civil war. So I guess that's what I'm trying to do. But more directly, I'm just trying to help people get some tools for kind of being a little bit less stressed out in their life. So you can check it out if you want to check out at Outrage Overload. It's about 30 to 40 minutes every couple of weeks. And my thing is it'll change your life.
Okay. Hey, we're all about that now. Okay. Well, very good. Well, Mr. Beckmeyer, I appreciate you coming on the show. I'm glad we had a pretty good discussion with this because it hits on all the things that really affect almost all Americans, period. Okay. Right. A lot of them don't realize it, but it is the base things that we're so divisive on. So maybe somebody will pay attention to this. You know, if we keep pushing, maybe we get some people to pay attention.
It's definitely going to be a bottom up movement for sure. So yeah, I'm looking. Right. I'm hoping that that's what we have to do because it's not going to come from the top down.
No. We all know that's going to happen. Yeah. All right.
Well, thank you very much, Terrence.
Yes, sir. Thank you. All right. It's our interesting conversation. Again, very political in its own way, but as what I consider right down the middle. Okay, because neither one of us are advocating for one or the other. Okay. It's all about letting people know why we're so angry and maybe open up some eyes and ears. And maybe we can make some changes that are a lot more positive for the rest of the world. So with that, I'll let you go. And I'll be back again next week with another show. Sláinte.
While I still have your attention, I want to tell you about how you can support this podcast and my efforts in general. This podcast will continue to remain free to subscribe to on all the major mobile podcast apps on my YouTube channel, Krana Biha, and for the first 30 days on my Substack page, Krana Biha, the Tree of Life at Substack.com. With that in mind, I'm asking for donations of any amount. I decided that I would rather ask for donations instead of charging subscriptions, so everyone has an opportunity to watch or listen to this podcast everywhere in the world. All I'm asking for is help in defraying the cost to produce and distribute this podcast and maintain my website. I have set up a donation tab on the Village Oak Tree webpage at rss.com and a donation page on my website at www.kranabiha.com, which are all linked to PayPal for your security.
This way you can use any currency you wish from around the world, providing PayPal is available to you. Any amount's appreciated. Now, about my website. The easiest way to find it is to copy it from the background behind me if you're watching this video. If you're listening to an audio version, copy the website name from the podcast logo shown. Search for it and enjoy your visit. Lastly, I'm trying to sell some copies of my book, Fugitives in the New United States, which can be found at major book retailers around the world, such as Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Lulu. You can also buy from me direct through the bookstore page on my website. Fugitives in the New United States is available in hardcover, paperback, and digital form. Free if you're a Kindle subscriber. It's written for young adults and older, so it's safe. If this were a movie, it'd be rated PG. Look for Fugitives in the New United States at your favorite book retailer and enjoy it. I sell enough, I'll find the time to write the second book in this series. So I want to thank you for your support, even if it's just a like and a subscribe on my social media accounts. Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it and you'll return again for another episode of The Village Oak Tree. Please like, subscribe, and reply on the YouTube videos or the audio podcast where that's available. This helps with spreading the word about what I'm trying to do, like so many others, which is to shout about all the bad things our governments are doing to us all over the world. If enough of us decide that we don't want to take it anymore, we can force the governments to do right by us as we elected them to do. As I say goodbye this week, I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as you go about your day. May your hand always be stretched out in friendship and never in want. Slán go fóill.